No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope that my show will start dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. And we have a special guest tonight. Tonight we have Susan Milligan, who is a senior political writer at U.S. News and World Report. She has covered domestic and foreign politics for 45 years, from New York City Hall to the Albany State House, and from Eastern Europe to the Middle East to Congress and the White House. And we're glad to have her with us tonight. She's a resident fellow at Harvard University's Institute of Politics, and she's here tonight to talk about whether we should prosecute President Donald Trump and what this means to us. And this is an important subject, so we're happy to have you. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Susan. I so much appreciate it.
Oh, no, I'm delighted to be on. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start, right at the beginning. 91 felonies. This guy's been charged with 91 felonies. Now, I come from Newark, New Jersey, and I've never even heard of anybody that was accused of 91 felonies in four separate cases. But it seems like every time he's charged, his popularity grows. The polls show that he's raising more money. He's getting more popular. So what are we doing here? Are we doing the right thing in prosecuting him?
Well, it's not my judgment to make, but I can give you my perspective, my personal perspective, and just sort of my analysis of it. First of all, I think it's important to note that his popularity is going up among Republican voters, not among the electorate writ large. Mm-hmm. And that's a very important difference.
Yes.
So, because the reason he, and this is somebody that I knew back in the 80s when I worked for the New York Daily News covering City Hall, and he was just a real estate guy. And so even then he would talk about himself in the third person on the phone, which is kind of funny. But he tapped into this kind of sense of helplessness and victimization that people feel, and he's brilliant at that. I mean, he's a brilliant marketer. So every time he gets indicted, it just feeds into that storyline of they're coming after me, they're coming after me. So I have two completely separate thoughts on that I'd like to go through. The first one is the whole episode makes me sad in a lot of ways. And because it's just upsetting. And I reported in Eastern Europe for 5 years during the 90s, and I was in places where they did send their leaders to prison, or in the case of Romania, execute them on Christmas morning, or send them to The Hague. And I'm a little embarrassed to tell you that I would be in the former Yugoslavia, and some of my, colleagues, my Yugoslav colleagues would say, well, this could happen to you. And I said, oh, no, we would never fall apart along, political and religious and ethnic lines. No, that would happen to us.
Yeah.
We have an advanced democracy. And there is, I think that's one of the problems with this, is that we do think of ourselves as the kind of country where that doesn't happen. And we really don't want to go there because we don't want to be just one of those countries. However, if we don't go with this prosecution, and of course he's innocent until proven guilty, but if we don't go ahead with the process the way it's meted out for every other defendant, then we have no democracy either, right? So it's a very good, if people who have said to me, well, what if the deal was he doesn't run again? If you do that, you're just giving fuel to the idea that the whole purpose of these prosecutions is to keep him from getting back into office, and that's not what it is. This is the rule of law. He's been, you know, I've read through all of the indictments. I don't know if you have, but I mean, they're pretty damning, and that's what they would do for anybody else. But the second thing that's interesting to me is when I think of these four separate indictments, you think it would just get old after a while, but each one has its own quality. The first one, you know, with the payoff, I'm not sure that that's something that resonates a lot with the American public. I was wondering about the value of doing that one first. Who's that one? The classified documents is pretty open and shut, and some people don't fully understand it. They say, so he had classified documents. Other presidents have had it, too. It's like, yeah, but that isn't the point. The point is he wouldn't give them back, and that's the difference there between him and, say, you know, Biden and Pence and so forth. But you have the complication of having to prosecute him on something where you have classified material and you have to make sure people, you know, have the clearance to hear it. And some things they might not be able to use as examples in court for that reason. So that gets complicated. The January 6th indictment, I think, is probably the most consequential because it really does just go at the heart of what went on here and defending our democracy and saying you can't just, you know, have your people storm the Capitol and get away with that. And that one is, I think, goes to the heart of what is, you know, divides this country as well. What's interesting to me about the Georgia indictment, because my first thought was, well, you know, it's so complicated. We hear she's going to do RICO. But you know what? It changes the dynamic because up until now, since Trump has by and large been the only defendant except for Walt Nauta in the classified documents case, he's been able to use all of that to make this Donald Trump versus the world. They're out to get me. That's what this is all about. It's me, me, me. But when you have 18 co-defendants, it's not about you anymore. It's about the crime or the alleged crimes. The second thing is, I don't know that his co-defendants are going to be as loyal when they're facing prison time themselves. Trump definitely has a very loyal base, but those are kind of the people who went to the Capitol. The people who are really close to him, you know, some of these co-defendants, they got close to him because it helped them with their personal, you know, with their own careers. And the thing is, I'm not sure the country has the stomach to send a former president to jail. Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but they wouldn't have any problem with somebody like, I don't know, Sidney Powell, who again is innocent until proven guilty. It's just an example of somebody that, you know, the country doesn't have this kind of, it wouldn't make them squeamish, you know, to put somebody who's, you know, just another name behind bars. And then those are the people who may turn. And I can only say, nobody said this better than Nick Ackerman, who is a former Watergate prosecutor. I interviewed for a story I did on Friday, and he said they're not going to want to join the January 6th choir in prison. They'll be part of the songbirds who testify at the trial, and that may well be the case. So that's my opening salvo here.
Well, you know, you've got no argument for me. The most pusillanimous people on the planet are politicians. I see these guys bailing right and left in Georgia and you know, cooperating in any way they can to save their own skins. That's we've seen that before, and I think we'll see that again. What I question are a couple of things. First of all, are we agreed that it's unlikely this man will ever go to jail? I mean, doesn't he have enough money and enough legal power to, you know, do appeal after appeal after appeal and keep himself out of jail until he's too old to go anymore? I mean, isn't that one thing that we have to realize? And another is some of these cases, like the Stormy Daniels case, are we parsing it too much for the American public to get it? Even the classified documents thing. Right. Biden was found with classified documents, Obama, Clinton, right? Isn't that the way the American people are going to see it? And also with the Stormy Daniels thing, isn't it going to be like, hey, he paid off his girlfriend to keep her quiet? How many guys have done that? You know, doesn't it smack of a witch hunt to so many people And if we do prosecute them, and you're right, this plays with Republicans better than it plays with Democrats, but we have to take the Republicans into account, don't we? I mean, we've all agreed with it to be in this system that we call democracy. And it seems to me as liberals, and I am a liberal, that we constantly look at the other side as, you know, not people that of consequence, not people that we need to worry about. But we do. Half the country, last time we checked in a national election, half the country supported this man. So it's important that we not only, if we do prosecute him, to stand up for the rule of law, isn't it also important that we cool out the other side so that, you know, we don't end up in a situation where we've got a revolution on our hands.
Yeah. And I worry about that. I mean, I've reported in countries that had revolutions. And again, we kind of think it can happen here, or that, you know, January 6th on its own was just so stunning for that reason. That was the kind of thing I was used to seeing in these Eastern European, post-communist countries. But yeah, when it comes to, coming to your first question, the Stormy Daniels thing, I mean, that's a way that people see that case. He paid off his girlfriend to keep quiet. And, you know, you're right. Most people are going to say, well, it's kind of distasteful, but I can't really get that exercised about it. When that's not actually what the legal case is about, and others have been prosecuted for what he's been. But I don't think that's going to be central. And Alvin Bragg has already said he's willing to just wait, you know, for other ones to go forward. Classified documents, I mean, I agree with you that a lot of people just seem to think that it's just about, like, oh, he took a few mementos, or he had some boxes get mixed in. I can totally understand how that could happen, by the way, how things get sent down that weren't meant to be sent down, but not giving them back when the archives asked for them, and then, you know, not complying fully with a subpoena and all that, that's obstruction, and it's, you know, it's dangerous when you're talking about nuclear secrets and so forth. So I don't know whether that case, you know, if that were the one that were taking center stage, get more nuance, that people would see that. The problem with this situation, again, compared to Watergate. So with Watergate is, you know, you and I are probably two of the only people old enough to have a personal memory. But
unfortunately,
but with Watergate, remember that Nixon was not at the center of it at the beginning. It was not until later on, until James McCord, singing to the prosecutors, you know, sent that letter to the judge explaining what had happened for his, you know, at his sentencing, that they realized how closely involved Nixon was. But up until then, he was actually not a target of it all. And then the American public was watching all of this unfold. And so they came around to this idea of, you know, this is just unacceptable, and, you know, we're not going to tolerate this. Now, the Watergate prosecutors would tell you if he had not been pardoned that he would have been prosecuted. I don't know how that would have gone, but that they would have prosecuted him. And back then, though, it was, you know, obviously Nixon had a very loyal following, but it didn't have a sort of cult-like quality that Trump has behind him. And I think that there's a certain part of the electorate that you could put a piece of paper in front of him of Trump saying, I did this, I actually did do this, and it still wouldn't matter. I mean, I'll just use as an example, I'm a fierce Buffalo Bills fan, and so I was following the Damar Hamlin thing, you know, very closely. It was a terrible thing, you know, when he collapsed on the field. There are still people who think, even in Buffalo, who think that he died on the field, that he had a reaction to the COVID vaccine and died, and there's a big cover-up, and there's actually a body double now. And you're like, really? Someone who looks like Damar, somebody who can make a fourth down tackle and keep them seriously? But you could not put any piece of evidence in front of them that would make them change their mind. And there is a part of the Republican electorate, especially, that is like that. Not all of them, though. Not all of them. And definitely not, you know, a majority of the country itself, but a lot.
Well, I think what we find now is what we've always said in Democratic politics. I've been in Democratic politics for 40 years, and we've always said that Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. So I see a lot of what's happening now with Republicans now as people saying, well, he's our candidate, and that's it. And this is what we do. We line up behind our candidate. But, yeah, there is that, obviously, that core of people. And I grew up in my grandmother's house. My grandmother was an Italian immigrant who held tons of prejudices. And she voted. We grew up in North New Jersey. She voted for every bad Italian mayor of Newark, regardless of how corrupt they were. It didn't matter to her. You know, all that mattered was that, you know, he was her guy. And I certainly see that same kind of cult-like attitude in Trump followers. By the way, my assistant, who you probably know, she booked you on the show, is also a rabid Buffalo Bills fan. It annoys the hell out of me because I've lived in Washington for 40 years and I no longer have a football team that I can respect. I mean, the Commodores or Commanders or whatever they are, I'm not even sure they're going to make it this year. But anyway, and they play the Buffalo Bills in the second round of the season. So we'll see. I'm trying to get Karen to give me 21 points, but I don't know if she will. but anyway,
not about winning. It's about the character. And I, you know, Buffalo is a place where when the snow was so bad that they had to move the game to Detroit, and Detroit was a wonderful host. The players could get to the air. I mean, planes were flying, but there was so much snow they couldn't get to the airport. And do you know that fans went to their houses and helped them shovel out their driveways? This is what we do. We're very loyal. And winter wins, really, because it's not about that. It's about community, and it's about, you know, so.
That's what people with good football teams say. People with football teams say, we want to win, damn it. We don't care about character. We care about winning. And isn't that, you know, not to be funny here, but or to be glib, but isn't that what's going on here, too, is that
Republicans
feel like they have to win because liberals are so horrible. I mean, we've villainized each side of the electorate. But let me just talk about the polls for a minute. The majority of Americans, and this comes from your article, want him prosecuted. We get that. But also, recent polls show that 28% of Democrats, only 28% of Democrats, and 17% of Republicans have trust in the legal system.
Yeah. But for different reasons. For different reasons. And that's I think we have to be careful with how we read some polling. First of all, let's not dismiss that a majority of the public wants the former president prosecuted. That is a huge emotional leap for Americans. Again, we're not used to that. France has sent its presidents to jail for a little while for some, you know, kind of, I don't know, corruption thing or whatever it was, financial. But we're not used to that. That is really, that's an amazing thing to me that a majority of the country is willing to do that. It's sad and it's difficult and it's just, it makes you feel like we're one of those countries that we like to lecture about democracy. So I wouldn't dismiss, that's actually pretty notable that it's there. But when it comes to, so you're talking about something else in the polling and I forgot, what were you saying?
Well, that only 28% of Democrats trust the legal system, 17% of Republicans. So very, very low number.
No, it is. Well, look, faith in institutions as a whole has been diminishing for decades. I mean, and it's government, it's elected officials, you know, which would be a separate category of that. It's journalists, the church. I mean, respect for institutions has really dropped, and some of that's healthy in the sense that you shouldn't blindly follow anyone or anything. You should, you know, that's how I was raised anyway. It's why I became a journalist, question authority. That was the root of it all, right? But it's also for different reasons. And it's interesting because when you look at the polling and I'll see people say, oh, this percentage of the country thinks that the country's on the wrong track. Now, 15 years ago, you and I both know if somebody was president and 70% of the country thought we were on the wrong track, that person was done. But it's different now because some people think the country's on the wrong track because they want Trump back. And some people think the country's on the wrong track because they're worried we're going to lose our democracy. They're two totally different things. So, you know, you've got to take a look at that. But yeah, I mean, the faith in the judicial system is really, that is frightening to me because you think of that as the ultimate arbiter. And even after the 2000 election and the recount, which was a painful time, but I still feel like it wasn't remotely at the level then that it is now. And people looking at the individual members of the Supreme Court and wondering whether they're on the up and up, and you know, all the questions about Justice Thomas and the gifts that he's gotten and so forth. And you know, what I find even more troubling is when I hear U.S. senators who are also lawyers, meaning they're officers of the court, saying things like the jury system is a joke, or, you know, you can't try him in Washington, D.C. because it's not a, you know, you can't take that city seriously. It's a full of Democrats or whatever. And, you know, it's not like political party is a protected class under the 14th Amendment or anything. I don't know where they get the idea that your jury has to be, of a certain sort of political bent, in addition to which, if they even got into that, then you're underscoring this idea that this is only a political, it's a political persecution instead of a prosecution. So then you don't want to go down that road. But yeah, that is deeply troubling to me. And that's what makes me genuinely concerned about our democracy. And I don't say that lightly. I know that people sometimes say apocalyptic things because they'll get responses on Twitter or whatever. I've been in countries where the democracy has fallen apart, and I fear that it could happen to us. I really do. I think we have more safeguards. I mean, the irony is our really complicated, annoyingly complicated decentralized election system is the reason that January 6th didn't work. If we'd had just a centralized, election, they pretty easily could have undone it, but because you had the different states and so forth. Let's think about some of the people who have not gotten on that train. Look at the Republican officials in Georgia, the governor, the secretary of state, the former lieutenant governor. They're not buying this. And, they're not afraid to take on Trump. And, you know, Brian Kemp saying the election was not stolen. This is a free and fair election here. And that's interesting to me, you know, especially in a state like Georgia.
Well, it's interesting, me too, and it's scary. You know, after the whole thing was over and they were saying, you know, that they had cheated in Arizona and Georgia, these were Republican secretaries of state that came out and said, no, they didn't. And people still didn't buy it. And, you know, and also just the logic of it all, that the only cheating was done in states where he lost. In states that he won, there was no cheating. I mean, what is that? And why would you cheat in a state like Pennsylvania, for example, where Biden was ahead in the polls the whole time? Why would you bother to cheat there but not cheat in South Carolina or Texas or someplace where he was behind? You know, I mean, the whole thing to me was crazy that people were buying it. But again, I think that they just don't care. And therein lies the rub for me. And the problem is they just don't care. They think that liberals have gotten out of control. You know, I said when we first started the show and started talking about this right after the election, I said, just imagine if you were somebody hiring somebody and you saw Hillary Clinton's resume and you saw Donald Trump's resume, but you decided to hire Donald Trump. We said this in 2016. How could this happen? The guy was so unqualified compared to the candidates he was running against, but people didn't care. They just cared that, right. I think, that liberals have moved the country forward too quickly, and that they want, and that this guy is, you know, their their counterbalance. You know, it's like I said, it's like throwing your shoes into the machine, right? So throwing the sabot into the sabot into the machine. You want to disrupt it. You want to stop it. And right. He's the disruptor. What if he's not convicted?
Well, that's the thing. And I want to go back to something you said.
I
wouldn't say that that's the reason for his rise, that they think liberals went too far. In 2016, first of all, you and I both know that people don't make their decisions to vote for a candidate based on looking at the sort of the resume and the accomplishments. You could give somebody a list of where somebody's positions are on different issues and where they think with yours, and you'd be surprised how many people are choosing someone else. It's just... It's just how a candidate makes somebody feel at that particular moment in history. And I remember this when Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were in the primary, and, you know, I was up in New Hampshire very early on. They were up there very early, and I came back and said, this is back when I was writing for the Boston Globe, and I said, you know what, she impresses people, but he inspires people, and this primary is going to come down to which one of those things is stronger. And the second one was stronger slightly. I mean, he, you know, was a very, very close race, as you can remember.
Yeah.
Trump in 2016, it's not that people thought that he was some conservative, you know, icon. He wasn't. He's not really an ideological guy at all. He doesn't really have a political philosophy. They were just frustrated with the way things were going. And here was somebody saying, I'm going to stir things up. I'm going to shake up everything. I'm the businessman. I'll do this. And they kind of took a chance on that. And he didn't get elected in 2020. So this, it's not, you know, I know it's a painful time for Democrats even thinking of 2020 because of how, you know, the fact that it was even a contest, but he didn't get reelected in 2020. And when you look at the polling too, and again, we can just go with the usual caveats of, you know, what crap polls can be, right? But, you know, right. He's not made inroads among independents and suburban voters the way he would need to win. I mean, even if he got everybody out who is on, you know, on his side, which I think he did pretty much in 2020. He got more votes in 2020 than in 2016, but Biden got more than Hillary. You know, remember, nobody thought that Trump could get elected in 2016. So a lot of people who just didn't like Hillary. They can't even necessarily tell you why. It might be because she's female, or the things they don't like her, I would say, are kind of through the prism of her being a woman. I think if a man had some of those qualities, it wouldn't bother them as much. But it doesn't really matter. The point is, they just thought, I don't have to show up because, you know, I'm not crazy about her, but, you know, he's going nowhere.
Right.
Well, turned out not to be the case. So when you look at the polling, he's just not making inroads among these groups. And I think he's kind of topped out a little bit. You know, the Democrats freak out and overreact more than Buffalo Bills fans, if that's possible. And they saw that New York Times poll that had them tied at 43%. They're thinking, oh my God, that's terrible. But when you look at the poll more closely, what Biden has to do is say to people, I know I don't get you all excited. I know I make grandpa jokes. I know I'm, you know, not the face of the future of the party, but I need you to vote for me. That's an easier thing to do than Donald Trump saying to people, yeah, I know I've been indicted on, you know, 90 some odd counts of felonies, but come vote. Whoever is voting for Donald Trump is already saying they're voting for Trump. It's not 2016 where somebody might be more, you know, persuadable. I'm not saying he can't win. He can. I mean, and the Democrats should take him very, very seriously that way. It's just a different situation. And there's some Trump fatigue, too. There are people who are just kind of, you know, tired of the drama, for want of a better expression. I mean, one of the reasons I really thought that Biden was going to get the nomination and win is, you know, I told my family, don't underestimate the desire of the American people to turn on the TV and be bored by the president. I mean, it is just physically and emotionally and mentally exhausting to sort of turn on the TV and see somebody insulting people and talking about injecting bleach into your veins. And it's exhausting. And they wanted a break from that. I absolutely think he could win. I do. It's just that he's got a much harder path now, even with the benefit that he gets among his hardcore base with, you know, casting himself as the victim.
Well, I agree with that. And I think that, you know, if he couldn't win in 2020, after all this, he's certainly not going to be able to win. That would be my gut reaction. But the thing that worries me are two things. First of all, that I worked for Jimmy Carter, who was a one-term president. And if Watergate, I think history will report, tell us that if Watergate hadn't happened, Jimmy Carter wouldn't have happened. And I wonder if Donald Trump hadn't happened, if Joe Biden would have happened, right? He was the calming force that brought us all back together. And if that's one thing that bothers me. And another thing that bothers me is, in a recent poll, less people want Biden to run than Trump. Now, the democratic process, I'm a superdelegate, and I'll be a superdelegate, I believe, again, for the third time in a row. And the democratic process is set up so that an incumbent can't be defeated. There's no way that any Democrat, in my opinion, can get into the process and win in the primary, win at the convention, because the system, given superdelegates, has been set up to ensure that that doesn't happen. So Biden will be will in fact be the nominee, in my humble opinion. But these things worry me. I think you're right. I think he could win. And of course, I was the guy. The one upside for me of Donald Trump getting elected is that in 2016, I told every member of my family who was worried about this, don't be crazy. Nobody's going to vote for this man. And now none of them ask for my political opinion anymore. So, so that worries me too. But are we serving justice here? Is there justice if we convict this man and we send him to jail? Is society served by that? Are we being served by that if that causes the country to split down the middle? Isn't it? There's two professors that have written about getting rid of him because of a clause in the 14th Amendment, which we've been talking about for over a year now. Should we just get rid of him, just get him out of politics and not worry about where the chips fall on the rest of the stuff?
Well, I mean, I can't answer that question because it's a very difficult one. As I said, I don't know that this country has the stomach to send a former president to jail, and then you have to have a secure environment for him, and not just because he's a former president, because he's Donald Trump, it adds a whole other quality to it, right? So, I mean, you want to talk crazy? I probably shouldn't say this publicly, but in 2020, my family, they were also annoyed with me because I told them in 2016, not a chance, and I turned out to be wrong. So they've been very skeptical. But they said, "Do you think Biden will win?" And I said, "I do, but I think Trump won't go." They said, "Right." And then they really thought I was nuts. They said, "What do you mean he won't go? What are they going to do?" I said, "I think he's going to try to find a way to just not leave. I don't know how he'll carry it off," and it turned out to be the case, right? So this is my other crazy thought. I wonder if he goes overseas somewhere where he'll be welcome. And they haven't made him turn in his passport, and, he has a plane, and I don't think it's out of the question. The difference with him is he doesn't want to cut a deal. Because that part of his ego gets in the way, where he just thinks if he cuts a deal, then it shows that he's weak or something like that. So I think he's counting on the fact that that Americans will feel very uncomfortable sending a former president and him particularly to prison. But the thing is, what are you going to do? Are you going to say that's just an argument for not prosecuting someone at all. Are you going to say somebody's above the law because they were a former president or because they're running for office or because they have a following that's really devoted and we're worried what they do? You don't have a democracy if you decide not to hold somebody to the same standard of the law because you're worried about how people will react. I mean, you don't have a democracy anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, there's an element in all of this from the liberal side that I feel, and again, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool liberal, but there's an element that I feel that people are more interested in retribution with him than they are in justice. And, you know, I find that a very scary thing, that he's actually, yeah, that Trump himself has used that, right? I'm your retribution. He said that to people. And I think, you know, certainly that's people on the Republican side of the thing, or conservative side of who support him, feel that. But I think liberals also feel it.
Yeah.
Don't you think totally. That's true?
Yeah, I think there's a part of the you know, liberal populace that just really wants to get him, but not in a way that, which sounds like a, you know, I shouldn't have been so glib about that, but they want to see him punished for what they think he's done wrong.
Right.
And because it's Donald Trump and it's not some person, I'm trying to think of, you know, Boesky or something like that, somebody who really can generate a lot of animosity among people who think that he cheated people and so forth. And, but it's not the same thing. You know, it doesn't carry the same political weight to say, yeah, I want to see that guy behind bars after he cheated all these people or whatever. It's just different. But it's hard because he's Donald Trump. So there's no way you're going to be able to treat him as an ordinary defendant. And I'm just really curious to see whether he, you know, goes. I don't even know, will they require him to be in the courtroom for the trials? I don't know. I mean, I don't know how long they can drag it out. I get different answers from different people about, you know, who gets to go first and whether he can actually get these things put off until after the election. I mean, that's an awful long time to get a delay on, you know, on a trial. But I don't know. I should tell you that my knowledge of the law is limited to watching every episode of Law and Order at least 30 times. So, although a former prosecutor said to me, you know, you could pass the bar with that. So I don't know, you know, how a lot of this is going to play out. But it's unprecedented. But then so is what happened on January 6th. So is, you know, his behavior with the classified document.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I find attractive about the 14th Amendment option is, one, that it would get him out of politics, and two, it would say, look, the Constitution, we all argue about the Constitution, but the Constitution is supreme. He violated the Constitution. It's clear that he violated the clause that, you know, to me anyway, it's clear that he violated that clause of the 14th Amendment, which says you can't be involved in an insurrection or inspire an insurrection, you know. So, but I want to go back to something that you said, and that is that he's not going anywhere. And that's the thing. Convicted or otherwise, he's still going to be there, and we're still going to have to deal with his people. Because they make up a large, maybe not a majority, but a large minority. So they're going to have to be dealt with. And I don't know that, I think that's one thing that I also like about the 14th Amendment, you know, kind of strategy, is that it doesn't, you get rid of the whole witch hunt thing, I think. Mm-hmm. I think this starts to look like a witch hunt. And obviously it's working, okay? Because let's look at what's going on just this week. He's not going to go to the debates. And Joe Biden, President Biden, isn't saying anything about the indictments. It's because they understand.
I think it's smart, actually. I think that's
smart.
Yeah,
of course it is. Of course it is smart. You know, as a member of the press, you realize that, you know. Yes, it is smart. But it also, to me, says something, which is that I don't want to get involved in this because this is working for him. And I think that's why, you know, not going to the debates is the same thing. His people are saying, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well,
you know, you're doing well. Don't go out there and say something stupid.
Right. No, I honestly, I as much as I think as a citizen that everyone should get up there and debate. If I worked for him, I'd say, don't go to that. Why bother? You're already way ahead. You don't need to knock anybody down. Now, what'll be interesting is that he's still going to probably dominate the debate, right? Even though he won't be there, he'll still be a big part of it. We have seen some movement. I mean, obviously we had Pence say that, you know, there was none, he had no knowledge of any, you know, declassification of things that Trump said. Mark Meadows said the same thing, I think, this morning. You're seeing a little bit. Will Hurd got booed about a month ago when he talked, when he said Donald Trump is running for president to stay out of jail. And just more recently when he talked about how the election wasn't stolen, a few people actually clapped. I mean, not that Will Hurd's going to get the Republican nomination for president. You see minor shifts there. They're just in an awkward situation because the only way any one of them has a chance is if Trump just somehow implodes, you know, if he just collapses. And they want to be the person standing there ready to go forward. And, you know, we used to think that was going to be DeSantis, and he just seems to be collapsing too. Again, coming back to what we were talking about with Hillary and so forth, people just don't seem to like him. It's not even about like, well, this woke stuff is getting a little crazy, or why is he taking on Mickey Mouse or whatever. He's just doesn't, you know, campaign well. People just don't kind of, you know, connect with him. But I don't know. He could resurge a lot of time.
As somebody that worked for Walter Mondale, among other people, I can tell you, yeah, that's absolutely the case. As you pointed out earlier, people got to like you to get you. It doesn't matter if you're the smartest person on the planet and that you have more credentials than anybody else. They have to like you. That was one of Hillary Clinton's problems, is that she was unlikable in to a lot of people. And, you know, and I read her book, and the thing that I took from it more than anything was that she said she had no place to stand as a candidate. When she was tough, she was a bitch. When she was not tough, she was a girl. You know, there was no place for her to stand. And I get that. People got to like you. But
I'm not saying it's fair. I'm just saying that's the reality.
You're right. That is the reality. Yeah. And I don't think it's fair either, but it is the reality. And that's why I always try to be likable, so I'll get reelected. But if we get the Hunter Biden thing, which I really don't get the Hunter Biden thing. Okay, he's the president's son. Should we talk about Trump's children? I mean, really, this is crazy. But it's a
really good example. Right? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
No, what's interesting to me, because the Hunter Biden stuff is a completely separate thing, and, you know, people saying, well, he's getting special treatment. It's like, well, in some ways he did, because normally the IRS, they don't want to put people in jail. They just want their money. So unless you are part of some, like, you know, conspiracy, some type of conspiracy, they're not wasting their time throwing you in jail. So the people who thought that was it. Now, I don't know whether they've got, you know, the federal prosecutors have, you know, investigators have something else on him aside from the gun thing and the tax thing. I have no idea. None of us has any idea. Maybe they do. But what fascinates me about this is people who are saying, well, you know, Biden is, you know, managing the Justice Department, and this. It's like, okay, so you think that Biden is going to the trouble of manipulating the Justice Department to go after Trump, but he's not going to use that power to save his only living son? Does that make sense?
I think I just think it's a strategy. And at the end of the day, does it come back to if the Hunter case is before the court and the Trump case is before the court, does this somehow equalize the candidates by saying, again, just like the classified documents, they both had classified documents. Well, look, they're both in legal trouble. Even though this really has nothing to do with the president being in legal trouble, they're trying to make an issue out of his son to say to the American people, look, they're all doing this. Yeah, Trump did a few bad things, but so did Hunter Biden, and that's the same thing. And And, you know, I think you're just using it to obscure things. And I wonder if somehow that equalizes in the American public's eyes the two candidates. And that's exactly, you know, why they're going after Biden way they're going after him.
Yes, that's definitely why. And, you know, every time there's an indictment, all of a sudden we get leaked something that the House committee had, you know, several weeks previous that they just, you know, are trying to sort of muddy the waters. I mean, first of all, I think it's a little pathetic to think that something about Hunter is going to, you know, overshadow, you know, a RICO indictment out of Georgia. It's not. But, you know, the thing is, I think the people who do sort of say, oh, they're all a bunch of crooks, those people were not voting for Biden anyway. What we're really looking at right now are the voters that are going to make the difference in 2024, and their suburban voters and their independent voters. And the other thing, and I know we're talking about Trump, but I think that abortion could end up being as big an issue or an even bigger issue than Trump in 2024. And why the Republican Party hasn't learned yet that issue is not working for them. And I'm not saying to abandon your values on that. I know for people who are anti-abortion, it's a, you know, for many of them, very deeply held personal moral beliefs. That's their right to believe that way. But the way they've gone at it in such a punishing, legislatively, in such a punishing way is not working. Look at Ohio. I mean, that's extraordinary. There was just a landslide defeat of a referendum that would have made it a lot harder to get this other referendum passed in the fall that would enshrine the right to abortion in the Constitution. And they lost it overwhelmingly. And they lost it not just in the cities, but they lost it in what we would call these collar counties around the population centers around Cleveland and I think Akron. And it's very similar to what happened in Georgia with the collar counties around Atlanta, which enabled Biden to take that state. I'm not saying that Biden's going to take Ohio. I can't imagine that happening. It's still a pretty red state. I'm just saying that this issue, there have been now, I think, six statewide referenda on abortion, and they've lost every single one, and not just in blue states, but in Montana, you know. And so that is another factor out there that's not Trump-related exactly that I think is, you know, that's where you start to lose some of these independent and suburban voters that Trump would need to get to win.
Well, but you know, sure.
He can absolutely still win, believe me.
Well, and yeah, and it's been a terrible mistake on the part of the Republicans. You know, I don't know a woman that's not upset about this. You know, of course, I hang out with liberal women. So, but you know, my daughters, for example, who haven't, you know, they've been the kind of typical young people that they talk about politics, but they don't get too involved. They're just apoplectic over what's happened in the Supreme Court and some of the other things. So they're motivated. I guarantee you both of them are going to vote, and they're not going to vote for Trump. And that's going to be their issue. It's going to be abortion.
Right, exactly. But how much, I think but it, a lot of people
yeah,
like
go
that.
Ahead. Well, how much has
No,
Trump,
and the thing is that the mistake I think also that they make is thinking that it's only an issue of access and thinking like, okay, well, wealthy women will always be able to go somewhere and get an abortion or women who are past childbearing age. And they don't understand that for women who are favor abortion rights, it's not about that. It's about what it says about you personally, that you don't want your government telling you that your purpose on this planet is to, you know, is to be a public incubator at will, even if you're not capable of getting pregnant or even if you have the means to go somewhere and terminate a pregnancy as others don't. That's another thing I think that they don't quite get. But again, I understand it. For a lot of people, this is a very deeply held belief,
right,
and I respect that. But legislatively, they just went too far. They were doing better when they did like the frog in the slowly heating water kind of thing. But, you know, to have pass laws wanting to put women in jail if they, you know,
and
if they're having a miscarriage. And I mean, for heaven's sake. And
yeah,
doctors,
it's
right.
Crazy. They want to put doctors in jail, and they want to put your next door neighbor who drove you to the clinic. They want to put her in jail too. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And you're absolutely right. My wife is the mother of three children, There was, you know, we had children when we were older. She had amniocentesis. We talked about the idea if we had if we found out that we were likely to have a child with a birth defect, what we would do. And we would have gone forth with the pregnancy. We both decided that. But my wife is absolutely against all this nonsense restricting a woman's right to choose. And that's what it's all about for her, for my daughters, for every other woman I know. It's not about the act itself. It's about telling women that they can't have control over their own bodies. It's crazy. Well, let me...
I would always say never underestimate how pissed off a woman can get and how long she can stay that. Yeah. That is a mistake all the way around.
Yes. Yes, I'm married with three children, two of whom are girls, and well, women now, and yes, and I try not to piss any of them off. They're they're formidable adversaries, I can tell you. But you know, we see this shift in the country. Like right now in Washington D.C., we're under attack. We've had two pieces of legislation overturned by the Congress for the first time in 35 years. There's now legislation to abolish the office of mayor and council in the District of Columbia so that we have no government at all. And that I think what conservative Republicans are doing here, they don't care about persecuting the district as much as they care about holding the district up as a whipping boy, you know, political pinata for 2024 to say, this is what happens when you let Democrats run things, you know, that you get high crime and you get all these other terrible things. And now the poor Congress has to intervene. The Republicans have to, you know, stand up and take control to set things straight. The Republicans in Congress understand that all this nonsense will never get through the Senate because of the filibuster. You know, so it's all going to die when it comes out of the House. But they're not doing it to make it happen. They're doing it to for the PR value of it. And so that's the I think that's really the eternal question here. With all this stuff, is how far do we go to prosecute him? Is there a balance that we can strike between not looking like it's a witch hunt and making it look like we're upholding the rule of law? Or are we just destined, no matter what the outcome, his popularity is going to increase from all this? Are we playing into
it? It increases among a part of the electorate that he definitely needs to show up. It's just not enough on its own. Like, his popularity is increasing among the Republican base, but you got to remember, look at the rest of the field. I mean, they don't really have anybody who emerges as a viable alternative, especially for people who are looking for someone to validate their sense of being, you know, just kind of screwed over. And it's not even a party thing. I mean, I remember in 1992, that was Bill Clinton's message, you know, for people who worked hard and played by the rules and got the shaft. And he in a way, like, got at that same dynamic. It's just not remotely the same way. But, and I understand that. And I understand why people reacted to that. It's just, I don't think he can play that card in 2024 in the same way he played it in 2016. And it didn't work for him in 2020. I mean, Donald Trump in 2016 was, you know, this kind of like rogue, you know, outsider guy. Let's try a different approach. Let's bring in somebody with no political experience. But then you had 4 years of him and, you know, some people were upset by some of the stuff that he did. And then that's why, or we're just, again, exhausted by, you know, by just the rhetoric of those years. I mean, I know the country is divided. I know there are a lot of really angry people out there, but, you know, at some point it is just exhausting. The other thing too, and I'm sorry for sounding Pollyannish about this, but I really do believe that most people are pretty nice. It's just that the haters are louder, and it's really easy to think that, you know, people are just at constantly at each other's throats. People think it's the same as Jerome the Hill, as you know. I mean, there's a lot of cross-aisle friendships and people working together. It's just, right. It just takes a few people to poison the entire environment. And because both chambers are so closely divided, it makes it even harder because, you know, you look like a traitor if you just make any kind of a deal with somebody from the other side, even if it's something that has pretty broad support. But I really do, this is a really painful time in our history, but I think we're going to get through it. I want to get through it. And, you know, we're going to look back on it, I hope, and say our democracy was tested and we passed.
Well, from your lips to God's ear, I hope you're right. Thank you so much. We're out of time. Thanks so much for being with us and enlightening us. And thank you for your continued hard work in what you do as a journalist. We appreciate it, and I appreciate you being here. And at the end of every show, we leave you with the song, and we dedicate it to our guests. So this goes out to the exceptional journalist, Susan Milligan. We like her, even though she's a Buffalo Bills fan. here's one from The Clash. Should I stay or should I go? Susan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Go Bills.
We'll see you next week. Bye.
Okay.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know. Should I stay?
Representation in the capital of this nation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.